From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. We often hear that the global economy affects our lives every day, but it's hard to actually picture how that is, how things like international trade and working conditions in third world countries affect us here in the U.S. Pietro Rivoli, a professor at Georgetown University, says you can begin to answer such questions by learning about some of the ordinary things in our everyday lives. Rivoli has spent the last 5 years studying T-shirts and what they can teach us about the global economy. Inspired by her book, The Travels of a T-shirt in the Global Economy, we'll try to understand the world through a T-shirt over the next 3 days. NPR's Adam Davidson has this first report.
If you want to understand how the T-shirts in your drawer got to you, it helps to start at the beginning, with the cotton that was used to make them. Even if your shirts have tags that read Made in China or Made in Honduras, there's a good chance the cotton in them was grown on a farm somewhere in the United States by a farmer like Nelson Reinch. Planting season is still a couple weeks away, and harvesting is long over, so his farm looks barren and rust-colored, and he hasn't turned on either of his two tractors in a few months.
They've been parked since before Christmas, so I may not be able to start one for you.
Reinch grows 300 acres of cotton on a farm just outside Lubbock, Texas. He's 83 years old, and his wife Ruth keeps asking when he's going to retire. Nelson says he won't quit until he finds someone he trusts to take over the place. His dad grew cotton, and he's never done anything else.
As you say, how I got in it, I awakened one morning, and there it was.
When Reinch was a kid, helping his dad by hoeing weeds, cotton was a local commodity, used in the same country in which it was grown. That's all changed. Cotton is now shipped cheaply all over the world. Reinch's harvest competes in a global marketplace, fighting for sales directly against cotton grown by farmers in Africa and Asia. Fortunately for Reinch, the U.S. dominates the world market and has for about 200 years. There are plenty of countries in Asia and Africa that have better natural conditions for growing cotton. Lubbock is too far north and it doesn't get enough rain. So how has the U.S. maintained its dominance in cotton? The answer is technology.
When Daddy was starting, you planted cotton one row at a time. Granddaddy and Daddy had a one-row planter, and then when we came to West Texas, we had a tractor did two rows. And then some engineer up at McCormick Dairying decided, well, you could add to that and make four row. Well, that was a huge machine, we thought it was.
Now he uses an eight-row planter, while most of his competitors in Africa and Asia still plant by hand. In the U.S., Reinch at 83 can farm 300 acres alone. In Africa, it might take a dozen people to farm 5 acres. And the technology gap keeps growing. Innovation on African farms is almost stagnant, while Reinch can barely keep up with all the new pesticides, fertilizers, and genetically modified seeds. This new technology doesn't come cheap. U.S. taxpayers spend tens of millions of dollars on it every year. The U.S. also gives cotton farmers more than $1 billion a year in subsidies, which provide even more competitive advantage. Together, subsidies and technology firmly maintain U.S. global dominance.
We take hypocotyls, parts of the seedling stem, inoculate them with the bacteria, and then put them on this media that kills the bacteria, but the genes, by that time, the genes have been transferred to the plant.
Randy Allen is just one of dozens of cotton scientists at Texas Tech University in Lubbock. They're all trying to figure out ways to squeeze more profit out of the cotton plant. And they're not alone. There are university and government cotton research centers all over Texas and the South, all of them working to help U.S. cotton farmers compete in the global market. This is typical of the U.S. economy in the age of globalization. America does well in industries that advance quickly, in which research and development, and not manual labor, are the key factors of success. In this way, the cotton industry is a bit like software and jet engines, constantly innovating. The man in charge of making sure Texas Tech keeps the U.S. cotton industry moving forward is Dick Auld, chair of plant and soil sciences. He grew up on a West Texas cotton farm.
When I'd come home from school, after I did my homework, I'd put on my field clothes and I'd go to the field and pick cotton till it was dark by hand. And that has convinced me that we need all the technology we can have on cotton, because that's the kind of work that normal human beings shouldn't have to do.
Ald says picking cotton is miserable work. The bolls are surrounded by hard and sharp husks that cut your hands. You have to stoop all day. It's strange to hear someone who has devoted his life to cotton research saying he's never liked the crop.
I could live without it. I've made a peace with cotton, but it's still not my favorite plant.
He researches cotton because there's just so much money available, and because he wants to help all the third world farmers who still spend their days hand-picking. Ald says the average non-American cotton farmer is illiterate, barefoot, chronically broke, and hungry, and probably won't live past 40.
What concerns me most about cotton is the political ramifications of the crop. There's not a crop in the world that is more entwined to some of the political differences between Asia and North America and Africa. There's probably not a crop that keeps as many people tied to the ground in rote labor. And so while cotton can be a wonderful thing, be the fabric of your life, it has a dark side.
Ald says he's driven to research cotton so that he can make life better for all those miserably poor farmers in Africa and Asia. But cotton is a business. The U.S. government and U.S. farmers don't pour all that money into research for humanitarian reasons. They're trying to maintain their dominance of the global market. Nelson Reinsch took me to the place where his cotton takes its first steps toward the global marketplace. It's a cotton gin, just down the road from his farm. West Texas farmers bring their harvest here. The seeds are taken out, the cotton is cleaned, and then a machine compresses that cotton into a bale.
This carriage comes over here and catches that bale when it topples out. And that's where it's shipped. It's, you go to China, you'd see them unload those bales of cotton right there.
Tomorrow we'll follow that cotton to Shanghai, where it's transformed into T-shirts. And we'll learn about the important role T-shirts and the apparel industry played in transforming China into a manufacturing superpower. Adam Davidson, NPR News.
For a map of a T-shirt's voyage and excerpts of the book, The Travels of a T-Shirt in the Global Economy, visit our website, npr.org.